Hey everybody, this is Rob Lindley and I'm on the Ramble Redhead Show.
Hi everybody, this is the Ramble Redhead Show and I'd like to welcome you to today's episode. Today we have a very special guest. We have a gentleman by the name of Rob Lindley. And if you are familiar with the podcasting world, then you should know about Mr. Lindley. And he is a gentleman who's on a show with J. Michael Haas. And they do a show called The Daily Purge. And then also, Mr. Rob also is involved with another program that he does with his friend. And it's called How Much Do We Love? And we'll get in a little bit more about that in a little bit. But without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Mr. Rob to the program. Hey, Rob, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. I love being on other people's podcasts. It's fun.
Well, cool. Well, great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today. And again, I just want to tell you, I'm a big fan of both your shows, and I think you're absolutely hilarious. And
thank you. You
and your partners in crime are absolutely good, and I just love the interaction you have between each other. And again, I'll have the links on my website, which I already do for The Daily Purge. I'm going to add How Much Do We Love on my favorites list and try to get some more people to your way. So
that's awesome. Thank you so much for that. We are always looking. You know how it is. You're always looking for some new people to pick it up and tell some other people.
Yeah.
This is an interesting. We're recording this by daylight, and I'm drinking coffee instead of vodka. So this is a whole new podcasting experience for me.
Wow.
Usually I'm drunk as a lord. I kid.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's crazy, but but I think sometimes it's a lot of fun when you have a little bit of alcohol in you.
Correct. And I used to, and really when I started podcasting, it was never my idea. Neither of the shows were my idea.
Mm-hmm.
I credit both of my co-hosts coming up with the ideas. And the first time I was on the podcast with John, I didn't even have Skype. I didn't have any equipment. He would just call me on my cell phone. And so literally, I would be like sitting on my front porch drinking red wine. And he would call me and I would just sit there and blabber with him. And then he's like, have you been listening to our shows? People are going crazy for you. They think you're hilarious. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just sitting here drinking. I don't know if that is worthy of people getting excited about, but evidently, we hit upon something.
Yeah, you did. I mean, I just love because you just come out of things out of left field, and it's just like, and you're not expecting it, and
yes.
It's and you're very, your improv is very, very good. You're sharp on your feet. You're like, you kind of remind me a little Robin Williams because he's like going one way, and then he gives you that little zing, and you're like, wow, where'd that come from? Yeah, and
then you realize that we've probably both done way too many substances in our lives and messed up our thought processes for good.
Yeah, and he's relapsing. Did you hear about that?
Oh,
poor guy.
No.
He had alcohol. He had been dried up for 20 years. And
he went on the bender.
Yeah, so he's getting help right now.
I hope he gets help with his chest hair, too.
Yeah, he's a little bit hairy.
You think? I'm always like, yikes.
Yeah, when he Mrs. Doubtfire, he must have had to do that every day. You know,
totally. They had a whole crew of just key grips and waxers.
Yeah, the list would be 25 people. Okay, we're getting way off topic here, so let's go back.
I'm sorry, this is how it is.
I know. Well, we got to get back to the real Rob, the Rob story. Now,
yes.
You were born in the illustrious state of Iowa.
That's correct. I'm very proud Iowa born and bred, but also smart enough not to live there.
Okay. And now what I always like to ask my guests when they're on the program, and so how old were you when you realized that you were a homosexual?
When I was a homo. I was definitely one of those kids who always knew they were different. Well, I grew up in Iowa, and I always lived in very, very small towns, so I always feel like the idea or the label of what gay was, I didn't ever understand. Like, I didn't know that it was a possibility. Like, it wasn't, not even in the realm of possibility, but for some reason, what was in the realm of possibility was, I remember in the 70s, there would be programs like Real People would show like transgendered couples and like bosom buddies, like showing people dress. So I was like, well, maybe there's just something weird with me that I really like the things that girls like. And so I remember that being a weird feeling when I was little. Like, I love Angels and Daisy Duke and all of that stuff, but it was not that I thought they were sexy, it was that I wanted to be them. Like, and if we were going to play Dukes of Hazzard, I was always going to be Daisy. So that, you know, and I liked dolls, but my mom, although a very conservative preacher's wife, was also in the 70s, especially for small town Iowa, very forward thinking as far as how she was going to raise me.
Right.
And she was definitely like an it's okay for you to have dolls kind of mom, and taught me to cook. And when I was in like junior high and didn't have friends, would take me antiquing with her. I mean, she did a lot of things that people now are like, well, hello. but it's just because my mom really has always loved me, and not, I don't know, never cared that she wasn't raising me to be some macho butch Iowa boy.
Right.
But that being said, again, it was never in the realm of possibility for me to be gay. Like I said, my parents are both United Methodist ministers, really, really conservative, fundamentalist Christians, who I love and respect so much. So I know, as sad as I get about their close-minded, I really I understand that the same kind of mindset I had in elementary school, where it wasn't a possibility, that's still where they live. So I grew up, I went to college, I always had girlfriends. I was very popular with girls. I always had long-term girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I got engaged when I was like 19 to a girl, and we were like engaged all through college. And I had like a couple things happen in college that were like kind of some gay fumbling around with other boys kind of things. But again, it was just kind of like drunken, I don't know, like drunken hand job in the lounge of a dorm kind of thing. Like nothing worth anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I met the woman that I ended up marrying after I graduated from college, and I got married. And when I met her, for some reason, I was in a place in my life and had been away from home enough that I was like, you know what? I want to tell you that I'm bisexual. I'm really attracted to men, but I am monogamous. So if I'm with you, I'm with you. And, but I don't want to pretend that I'm not attracted to men anymore. So that was like step one. And she was like, that's cool. She's like, you know, she was from a very liberal East Coast family, grew up in the arts, and so she'd been around gay men her whole life. And she was like, that's totally cool, but yeah, don't cheat on me. And I'm like, you got it. And we had that deal, and we got married, and we were together we dated each other for 7 years, and we were married for four. Wow. And never cheated on her. Had a really, really happy relationship. And then we got to a point where I think we both felt like something was wrong, and she's an actress, and she took a national tour of a musical, and while she was on tour, she had an affair with someone on the tour.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, see, here's the thing. You cheated on me, so now all bets are off. So I started dating guys in Chicago that while she was out on tour, and so it was really hard. I mean, we definitely had friends that knew us as couples, a lot of gay friends who knew us as a couple, and I had the mixed reaction of my gay friends who were like, finally, you're coming out. And I had a lot of other gay friends who were like, oh, you guys were the perfect couple, you know? So and now that I'm, you know, she and I are really good friends. We've been divorced for, 5 years now, 4 years? I don't know. Wow. Math probably doesn't add up of all these years. I'm not good with dates. But it's been a while now. We're really good friends. And I think that I have now developed into a more comfortable, more, I don't know, when, I don't want to say more gay, but people who meet me now are always like, you were married? And I'm like, well, yeah, but if you look at pictures of me now, I'm wearing, like, tight t-shirts and diesel jeans. Well, back right. then, I didn't dress like a gay guy. I was still always looked good. I was, like, fashionable. But I remember always, like, going to get my hair done. I'm like, nothing too gay. You know, because I didn't want any more people to be like, who are you kidding, being married, you know. And I guess I sort of was kidding some people, but
yeah,
I don't know. Well, it's a hard thing.
Yeah. Well, wow, it's amazing. I mean, I know you talked about it on the Daily Purge show, but and you made a comment like, well, if you don't think I was married, well, fuck you, people. You know, so I thought that was kind
of... Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, it was pretty
good. Well, it's so... The people who I meet now, like, some people are jokey about it, like, which I can take a joke about it, but yeah. sometimes I get really offended every once in a while. I'm like, you? Oh, who are you kidding, Mary? And I'm like, you know what? Fuck you.
Yeah.
But my whole thing about anybody's coming out story, I know you and I kind of talked about this prior to this interview, that everybody's story is, and that's what's so fascinating about it, everybody's story is so special in special circumstances, and it's what makes us who we are, gay or straight. Like, it's just part of your journey and part of your tapestry, and
yeah.
some of the weavings make a lot of sense, and some of them are as fucked up as anything, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, that's...
Now I'm...
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, now I'm just really in a... I think because of all of that stuff they went through, and a lot of stuff that I'm continually dealing with, i.e. my parents, you know, still kind of trying to get them to come around to just... dealing with my relationship with my boyfriend the same way they deal with my sisters and her husbands, you know, trying to get them to slowly come around. It's still a process, and it's still, and every day those challenges force me to be a little bit more out. You know, if that, does that make sense? You know,
yeah.
Like it forces me to cement how I feel more.
Right. Well, you know, see, let me backtrack if I could, because see, one of the things that you said, I mean, obviously your parents are both, you know, in religious fields, obviously, and so
right.
So how old were you when you finally told them?
Oh God, it was really recent.
Oh, it was more recent. Okay.
Yeah, really, really recent. In fact, I would say about a year after I separated from my wife. I had a steady boyfriend here in Chicago, and it was the first time I had a steady boyfriend that I thought, God, my parents would love this guy.
Right.
Like, he was from Tennessee, and my dad is, like, a total, like, Dr. Phil character. Like, he's a total folky country, calls me son. Every time he talks to me, he's like, now, son, you're not going to want to hear this. Yeah, that's my dad in a nutshell. He's like, well, son, sometimes in life you got to do things you don't want to do. And I'm like, Dad, we're from Iowa, not the South. Why do you have that accent? But I met this guy, and I was dating this guy. He's from Knoxville, Tennessee, and he reminded me a lot of my dad, just like really issues. He was a really, but a really sexy, like, redneck. And,
right.
And I was like, oh, my dad would love this guy. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell my big sister. Now, my big sister and I never got along, ever, growing up. And I told her, and she said the most interesting thing to me. She said, you know what? I think we're going to be friends now. And I was
really?
Like, what? What do you mean? She's like, you know what? You know why I've never liked you, Robbie? Because you spend your whole life bullshitting people. She's like, and I was always the one in high school who's like, I'd come home drunk and mom and dad would be like, have you been drinking? And she'd be like, yeah. And she'd get in trouble. And I would do something in high school and they'd be like, hey, were you out past curfew? And I was like, no, I was in bed. And they're like, oh, okay. And Debbie's like, ah, I can't stand how you get away with everything, you know, and I was totally the golden child. And so finally she was like, finally, you're going to be the one going to hell first. You know, like, we were totally joking about it. She's like, listen, I may be divorced and be a total slut alcoholic, but at least you're gay. So mom and dad are going to now think that you're not, you know, I'm the golden child.
Really?
So anyway, you
wow.
know, she, oh,
wow.
Well, totally. So I told her first, and then mom and dad came to visit me for Thanksgiving, and I actually, interestingly enough, I was house-sitting for Sarah Davis, my co-host on How Much Do We Love.
Right.
And we were going to have Thanksgiving at her house, even though she wasn't there. And because I was at the time working for a theater company that required me to be in the Thanksgiving Day parade and in Chicago. So I couldn't leave and go home. So mom and dad came to me. And so I do the parade. And of course, all my actor friends are coming up to me through the parade. And some of my actor friends know my story and were like, kind of eyeing my parents like, oh, these are the ones, you know, kind of thing. But then and I have all these flamboyant friends of mine who are like, what's up, girl? Happy Thanksgiving at the parade. And I can see my dad is just like freaking out. But we don't really talk about it. Right. And he was there the whole Thanksgiving weekend, and he was really, really distant to me.
Wow.
And so I talked to my mom about 2 weeks later. We were talking, I think, about Christmas or something. Like, what were the plans for Christmas? Was I coming home? Was I going to sing Oh Holy Night 8 times in church? And I said, you know, I feel like Thanksgiving was a bust. Dad was so weird. And mom said, well, I think he's still having a hard time dealing with the fact that you're living a homosexual lifestyle.
Wow.
And I was like, zoinks! Like, they came out to me. I didn't come out to them. And they were just like... And my mom, all my mom said to me, she's like, I hope it's never entered your mind that we would stop loving you.
Aww.
And I totally, like, the waterworks start. I'm like, well, actually, it did cross my mind. And she's like, well... She's like, I don't have to tell you this. It's not what we wanted for you. And she said, and honestly, I don't know if I believe it's what God had planned for you. But if you being a homosexual means that we're not going to have any contact anymore, that's not acceptable. She's like, so we'll figure this out. And then that was kind of the end of it. You know, we didn't really, that was as much as we were going to talk about it.
Wow.
And then when I came home for Christmas, they were driving me. For me to get home to this tiny town in Iowa, I have to fly to Omaha, Nebraska, and then drive for 3 hours to the town I live in.
Oh, boy.
It's real fun.
Sounds like it.
So, yeah, so we're doing kind of a holiday debriefing. You know, the holidays are over. They're driving me back to Omaha so I can get to the airport and finally have a drink. And I always hit that airport bar hardcore. I'm like, fuck, so much Jesus. I need a drink. So they're driving me to the airport, and we start talking about something. I don't know what we're talking about. Yeah. And I start crying, and they were talking about, like, life goals, and, you know, and I'm like, and I start crying, I'm like, I can't believe I'm 31, and life, blah, blah, you know, having one of those moments, and asking them questions, because the other thing I can't stress enough about my parents, that the weird thing about them being ministers is that I've always gone to church where my dad was the preacher, always, my whole life, so imagine, if you will, it's like if your dad was a dentist and that's the only person who's ever worked on your teeth. So if you had a toothache, who would you call? Your dad.
Right.
Well, if I have anything feel wonky in my life or especially spiritually feeling, they're like my spiritual guiders, you know? Right. And so it's weird that they're also my parents, but it's also like the whole foundation of who I am and what I believe in and the God that I pray to, all of that has been laid by my parents, which is a weird, weird dynamic.
Right.
It's a really great dynamic most of the time, but so I was having one of those moments of like, I don't know where my life's going. I don't know, you know, at the time I didn't have a boyfriend. I had just broken up with a really shitty boyfriend. It was a horrible relationship. So, and I was like trying to talk about all that, but not talk about it. And so I cry the whole way, basically, to Omaha, hoisted up to the bar, run into another faggot from Chicago at the bar, and where I'm like, ugh, holidays, and he's like, no shit. So we end up, because it's Southwest, we end up sitting next to each other. And then my mom calls me the next day, and she's like, your father and I have been thinking, and we're going to Orlando for a big Jesus conference. I don't know what it was called. It was something like Jesus Rocks 93 or whatever it was called. Right. And they're like, so do you want to go to Orlando with us? And I'm like, yeah, that would be awesome. And so, of course, I call my sister. She's like, smell you. You fucking come out of the closet. You have Cry Fest in the minivan. And you get taken to Disney World. She's like, fuck off.
Bitter much?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you
That's
have the you
life
have,
with the Lindleys.
Wow. So you have an older sister, and then you have a younger one, right?
Well, sort of. I call her because she's my little sister in my head. Yeah. The middle child in our family has Down syndrome.
Right.
So we always, my older sister, the oldest, we always joke that we're going to make t-shirts for mom and dad that say, I raised a whore, a retard, and a fag. And on the back of it, they ask me how. And we're just like, how about that? How about God being upstairs and being like, I'm just going to give this wonderful couple who thinks they've got it all together, I'm going to give them like a fucking fruit basket upset of birth defects. Not that they're birth defects. Not that homosexualities. No.
Yeah. Not that you're saying,
but like, you're totally, but we just always laugh about it. And my Aunt Nancy, actually, the other day, she was in Chicago. She and I were laughing about it. I'm like, isn't it crazy? And she's like, ugh. And then you start realizing that your aunt has the same dynamic with you as my sister. Like, my aunt's like, yeah, everyone thinks your dad's the perfect son. She's like, I just love it that his kids are all screwed up. Like, thanks, Aunt Nancy.
You can feel the love in that family, can't you? Wow.
It is, yeah. Oh, it's nonstop love fest.
Well, okay. Well, do you have anything else you want to add to that at all?
Not really. I mean, okay. It's an ongoing story, and the way I feel about it changes on a daily basis, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question, because obviously, you know, they have their feelings, but obviously they still mm-hmm. love you. They tell you that, you know, no matter what, you know, they're always going to be part of your life. And the key thing is that then you have to deal, you know, it's kind of like a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing, where you have your life, but then you really can't talk about it. And I'm just wondering, now that you have your, I mean, I know we haven't got to that part in your life yet where you have your current mm-hmm. partner, but you've been with him for about, you said 2 years, right?
Yeah, 2 years, and we've been living together for over a year, over a year of that.
Well, have you done family things together? Or has it always been you by yourself?
No. Yeah. And that's kind of where the little, like, baby steps to acceptance are coming. Mm-hmm. That, I remember last year when I was home for Christmas, I was like, gosh, I really wish Doug was here. And that's when it kind of started dawning on me. I'm like, as I build my own family as an adult, there gets to be a point where you leave behind your other family in a manner of speaking.
I mean, right.
And that, you know, and that's biblical. Like, that is biblical, that a man will leave his mother for a wife, you know, and
right.
that process is just now starting to happen with Doug and I, where we really, now it's more than boyfriend. You know, it's about a life together. Like, and so with Doug's family, they live in a suburb of Chicago, you know, Evanston. They live really close. They're really acceptant. They're totally liberal. He's also a lot younger than I am, so I think that's a little bit of it, too, that, like, he grew up in a city. He grew up when gays were just that much more accepted, you know?
Right.
And I have Mother's Day brunch with his family, and I go have Passover at his house, and I'm part of the family. You know, if there's any family event happens whatsoever, I'm there. And so it's getting to the point where holidays are going to be interesting, because it needs to start being, well, mom and dad, I want to come home for Christmas, but if I'm coming, I'm going to bring Doug.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I think it'll be interesting, because at this point right now, what makes me most sad is that I freely talk about Doug all the time to them.
Okay.
And just, I'll be like, well, you know, just dumb things like, well, today Doug has rehearsal all day, but he left me the car. Just a sentence like that. And never has my mom said, oh, who's Doug? You know,
I'm sure she knows.
She's pieced it together. But as far as her engaging in that conversation, that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
So it'll get there.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. I mean,
my older sister's Matt Doug. She came to see me in a play this spring and stayed with us at our house, stayed in the guest bedroom. You know, loves him, knows him. She has a framed picture of the three of us on her mantle at home. So I'm sure my parents have seen that. So they, it's there, but it's, slow baby steps.
Yeah. Well, when I talked to John Michael, is that mm-hmm. he had said that he kind of had the same thing that you did, and that, you know, that his parents really don't talk about it. And then I asked him, I said, well, how does that make you feel as a person, knowing that you can't really talk to your own parents about who you are as a person? And he says, oh, I guess you're going to think I'm a bad gay, you know? And I didn't mean it that way. But
no.
what I was trying to say is that, you know, because I have gone through it myself, where I had my parents and some friends and stuff who made a lot of negative things about gay people, you know,
right.
growing up, and I'm like, oh my God, am I ever going to really be able to come out to these people?
Right.
And then what happened is I finally realized that you get to a certain point in your life where you go, you know what, I am a person, I am who I am, this is just part of me, and if they can't accept this part of me, then, you know, then that's it, you know, basically. And so I finally had the discussion with my folks, I told them, and, you know, and they say they love me, and they want me to be happy, and all that stuff, but there
right.
was still that undertone that it was kind of a little bit of the negative. And so what happened was, when I had met my partner and we were together for a long time, that, you know, it was mandatory that he was going to be part of, you know, the family dynamic. You know, if we had a family
right.
thing, he was going to be there. But then the thing is, they were very accepting. They're like, it was really funny, like, not even a couple of years into the relationship, and they said, oh, we're going on a family trip, and you know, and my ex was going. It was no
right.
question. He was going. And but the thing is that even though I was with him for 13 years, and we did break up, unfortunately, but the thing was is that during that whole time, it was always Tom and my ex, and it was always
right.
you know, inclusive. And but the thing is that there was times where my mom would say these little comments, and I'm like, well, Mom, you know, why are you saying that about gay people?
Right.
And then I'd get on my little bandwagon, and I'd say, Mom, you got to look at it this way. You know, when you say something bad about maybe the flaming gay guy, you're really making a comment about me. And he goes, no, I'm not. And I said, yes, you are.
Right.
And then what happened is, now with my podcast, I'm telling about the interviews I've done and all the interesting people I've met, and they've listened to some of these, and they're like, wow, this show is really good. And it's totally changed their mindset now. And in fact, when my cousin and her partner had a commitment ceremony in June, one of their friends had talked with me, you know, afterwards, that they said, wow, you're really lucky that your mom and dad are here. You know, in a way, they're supporting you and they're supporting me. And I said, yeah, it's great. And he said, and I looked at him, I said, wow, your folks aren't that way. And he said, no, he says, because he was married like yourself and he had kids. And he realized that he was gay, and so he got the divorce, and he said that since I came out to my mom, she's had nothing to do with me since.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it is. And
I've met John's mom and dad, and I certainly won't try to speak for his coming out process at all. I've met John's mom and dad, and, I mean, one of the things that John and I bonded about immediately when we met each other is that we're from such ridiculously similar backgrounds.
Right.
Like, it's frightening how similar our backgrounds are. John's parents, I think, are going to be a lot like mine.
Right.
And part of the process too is that, like, getting your own roots dug a little bit deeper. And unfortunately, that's probably something that should happen with you as an individual, but it seems like it happens to a lot of guys once they really find true love.
Right.
And they settle into what they have in their mind as a domestic situation.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think that's something that we should strive to do by ourselves, but for some reason, it's like the minute you move in with someone and you know, get a pet and are picking out sheets together, all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is a real life. It's not just gay bars and poppers and lube. It is a real life. We're buying groceries together.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I think that's part of the process, and that's when you finally start wanting to talk to your parents about it.
Yeah.
But what John and I also have in common, I hate to speak for him, but I think he will agree with me, is that both of us are entirely capable of calling our parents, talking to them, and never mentioning that we're gay.
Yeah.
Like, never talking about it, and not really feeling bad about it.
Yeah.
And that's where John's, like, I guess I'm a bad gay comes from.
Yeah.
But it's kind of in that vein of, like, well, my parents don't tell me when they're having sex. You know, so...
Why should I, right?
Exactly. Well, it's a little bit of that, too.
Well, see, the point I'm trying to make is that I feel that as a person, you know, that if you can't accept who you are as a gay person,
right,
then it's going to be very hard for someone else. And so I have a good friend of mine who's 40 years old, and he will not say that he's gay. But he is.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, he is. And he's like, oh, I'm not gay. And it's just really sad. And I just tell him, I said, well, you don't understand that by not admitting it to yourself, that you're not going to, you know, you don't love yourself as who you are, then how do you expect somebody else to love you as you are? And so, and I was just trying to say that to John.
Yeah, I don't think,
and so,
yeah, I don't think either John or I are in that place. It's more out of respect for mom and dad.
Right.
Like, that, like, this is another example of it. Like, my dad doesn't drink at all and thinks that drinking is, like, literally, like, gasoline for the devil. Like, he is a total teetotaler. So, when I go home and we go out to eat, my sister will order a martini because she doesn't care. And she's like, whatever, I drink. I see the look in my dad's eyes when she does that, and it's... to him, like someone's rubbing his nose in something,
right?
That is right against what he believes in. So I don't drink when I'm home.
Yeah,
that's why I beeline it for the bar airport when I get.
because
it's kind of similar. I guess maybe it is some sort of weird denial thing, but part of it in my mind, and I think this is where John comes to, that in my mind it's like, oh, you know what? This is just like respectful. I don't need to tell my mom and dad every time I go to Sidetrack. I don't need to tell them, you know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, I think it's great that, I mean, I know that, you know, like you said, you're taking baby steps and it's going to get better.
Totally.
And, you know, and hopefully with time that they will see, you know, the way it should be. I mean, that you are a great person and that you're doing a great thing and you have a great partner. And, you know, I mean, things could be a hell of a lot worse. I mean, you could be you know, I mean, doing the drugs, you could be really promiscuous. I mean, you could have done a whole line of things.
Ooh, I'm not supposed to be promiscuous?
Oh, no.
Wait a minute. Back it up. I'm totally kidding.
Back that up. Okay. But okay. Well, we'll get off that topic now. But I'm realizing that we're almost. I think we're at probably the 30-minute mark or not over.
I know. Time flies.
It's amazing. Yeah. Well, I just want to. I'd like to say it because I definitely would like. Can we? Do you have more time to do?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and do the quick. Exit on this one then, but what I'd like to do is thank Rob for his wonderful contribution to part one of this episode, and again, I want you to make sure that you check out Rob's two shows. Again, the very first one is The Daily Purge, and you can find that at thedailypurge.net with J. Michael Haas as well as Mr. Rob, and he also does another great show called How Much Do We Love, and I'm spacing out her name, so you have to tell me her name.
Her name's Sarah Davis.
Sarah Davis and Rob does a show, and they're best friends, and they talk about all the things they love. So it's very, very good. And
it's a good one.
And their website is howmuchdowelove.com. So make sure you check that out. So what I'd like to do is also make sure you check out my website, which is rambleredhead.com, and you can leave a message about this as well as any of the other shows that you should be doing. And then also you can call my comment line, which is 574-203-4263. And if you'd like to email me, you can do that at rambleredhead@gmail.com. So again, Rob, it's been wonderful talking to you this very first part.
Thank you.
You're a sweetheart of a guy, and
stay tuned for part two.
Part two, coming up soon. Okay. And so thank you again, everybody, for listening to the Ramble Redhead Show.